The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Boston Red Sox just wrapped up a three-game series against the San Diego Padres, losing the series 2-1 in a best of three, getting outscored 21-7. Current check of the standings, the Red Sox are currently sitting 43-38 in third place in the AL East, still 9 games back of the division-leading Yankees, and have slipped to fourth in the wild card standings. A little reversey with the Kansas City Royals now 1.5 games back. We, as I mentioned earlier, the Bastards of Boston Baseball. You can find us on Twitter and or X at Bastards_Boston. I am your host, Charlie Smith, coming to you from Providence, Rhode Island for one more night. You can find me on Twitter at Smith_MLB. Our other hosts for this episode are Jeremy Schilling, coming to us from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Massachusetts, and Terry Cushman, coming to us from Myrtle Beach in South Carolina by way of Windham, Maine. Jeremy, how are you doing? Where can the fans find you? It has been way too long, my friend.
Yeah, it's nice to get a chance to talk baseball with you again. I'm good. I'm a little bit perplexed by the first 2 games, but the nice rebound here on Sunday. So I'm good. I'm medium. You can find me at JTShill20.
Excellent. And Terrence, how are you doing? How's the weather down there? Where can fans find you?
It is hot and humid down here in the Grand Strand. I can be found at Cushman MLB on Facebook at Terry Talks Sox. We have a blog. Just search for Bastards of Boston Substack, and you'll find our in-print content there. And the Padres were our daddies this weekend in 2 out of 3 games. In the fifth inning, they scored, it was definitely all 9 runs on Friday and then a ton on Saturday. That fifth inning was a beast. But yeah, so we'll see. Kind of the tone is starting to change a little bit. The Astros, did they win today or no? If they won today, they're 1 game above if they won. But that's the team that's getting ready to leapfrog us here. And they don't sell at the deadline. They are always buyers. They don't really make a huge splash. They did win today. Wow. So they... Oh, that went 11 innings, so they must have scored 5 runs in that 11th.
But... Well, I was at the third game today for the series, watching the Red Sox win in a little bit of a rain game here. It started raining in the fifth inning. We weren't sure if they were going to finish it out because there was a couple of moments of lightning. No thunder, thank goodness, just quick glimpse of lightning. And I'm curious, like after the Cincinnati series, you know, you take 2 games out of 3 there. The Toronto series splits. I really am curious to know how we would have done in that third game. But what is your personal temperature check right now, Jeremy? I want to hear from you first and then Terry second. Are you concerned right now or are you just thinking this is a little blip on the radar?
I'm concerned because we were playing so well. We have the rain out in the Toronto series and then Breslow goes everywhere he can and tells everyone in management speak how they're going to sell. And then Pivetta comes out and is a dumpster fire, and the whole thing's just going the wrong way immediately. With that said, I've been keeping a 0 from 10 score. I was a 6.2 coming into the series. I'm now a 5.9. You can't come in and just get blown out like that, back-to-back nights in a pennant run. And I know it's early to be calling it that, but when you're on the outside looking in, every game's so important. And I don't mind losses. No one's going to expect like 700 baseball, but to come out, get two complete dud starts, and you can't be having that in the Hauk starts. You just can't. So, yeah, I'm certainly going the other way on my meter as we get past the Padres here.
Terry.
Well, I mean, these next handful of games are critical. I mean, you should be able to take two out of three against the, the Marlins. And do we have the Oakland A's right after?
We do not. We have the Yankees for a three-game set, and then we have the Oakland A's and then Kansas City for three right after that. So that's actually the series I'm going to be really excited about. But Terry, what's your temp check? How are you feeling right now?
You know, we can't really get into this whole thing on this show, but when I heard Breslow's interview on Thursday morning with WEI, we were still riding our high at that point. We had won, 8 out of 9? So I'm starting to shift. I'm looking at this week July schedule where we got the Marlins, Oakland, 3 against the Rockies, and then a few against the Mariners. The Mariners, for whatever reason, just don't scare me offensively. But I'm starting to wonder, do we shift here to possibly buying? And then I hear Breslow's interview, and it doesn't sound like he wants to buy at all. So I don't really know what to think. I mean, what's the end game here? You know, if we're 7 above and in the third wild card spot, which we haven't been, we've been a few games outside of that wild card spot the last couple deadlines. So if we're in possession of a wild card spot at the deadline, what's the end game? I don't see how you punt here, but we might.
So I'll say this real quick. So Jeremy going from, you said 6.2 to 5.9, like a third of a point drop. That's, I think, honestly fair, because for all the same reasons, you know, you can't have the doors blown off twice. You can't have your lunch packed, as our former host Cody would say, two games in a row when you get outscored 20 games to 3. It's unacceptable. Pivetta's had a really rough month of June. 2-0 going into today, ended up taking the ended up taking the loss against the Padres. That was the 9-2 game. It hasn't been pretty. Has an ERA over 5. And the Tanner Houck start, I really want to say I'm not concerned about him. And the reason for that being is he gave up 3 home runs and had the worst performance of maybe his career. It was just nothing is working for Tanner Houck. Tanner Houck gave up 3 home runs. Tanner Houck had only given up 2 all season. So for me, I think this is just a really ugly blip, and it just so happened to coincidentally happen right next to Nick Pivetta, who on the trust meter, if I'm given like a 0 to 10, I'm nursing a 5 if we're really being generous here. Tanner Houck is still way up there. It would take another easily 2 bad performances in a row for me to say like we're in trouble, because here's the thing. If Tanner Houck can't figure it out, there's absolutely no reason why we should be buying at all.
And Terry doesn't think he will, because he's past his previous high in innings. I don't necessarily buy into that. I'm just speaking for Terry momentarily, because as you progress into a major big league caliber arm that's going to get a 8-year or whatever $1 million contract, you eventually exceed your innings limit and you get stronger and you learn how to pitch efficiently and not be max effort all the time. I'm going to save my commentary on Pivetta because he's my dud today. And I've got a whole thing about how I'm scared.
Just hit us off with it. Let's start with duds, because we didn't win the series. Go first. Hit us with your dud.
Yeah. So a couple things, and we've already hit on it. Like the transition from where we were in the Jays series to the start of this Padres series, we've already got the front office perpetrating ownership's propaganda and basically pouring water on the fire start that we, or fire run that we were on. And so I'm already like annoyed going in, especially after I heard the Breslow comments that Terry referenced. And my thought was, Pivetta's got to go in here and keep the momentum, have a good quality start. And he did not do that. He was 4 innings, 7 hits, 5 runs, all earned, walked a guy, 4 Ks, only threw 73 pitches. So at least Corey yanked him, so he's not taxed for his next start. His ERA balloons to 4.52. But that's not all. Okay, I'm going to go back through his last four starts in like 20 seconds or less. So he's got a really good start in Atlanta, 7 innings, no earned runs, right? His ERA drops to 3.4. Philly, in 4 innings, 4 earned. Toronto, he goes 7. He gives up 3, so quality start. His ERA actually stays the exact same. And then Cincinnati, 4 1/3, 3 earned. And then today's Monday. What day are we? I'm usually on the weekday show. Jesus. Friday's debacle. And his ERA went from 3.4 to 4.52, and it doesn't look like he's close to figuring it out. So we rely on him heavily, and we will rely on him heavily moving forward if we're going to compete, and this is a really big problem. Now, if you're going to go the other side of it and say, well, he's not going to be here because he's on an expiring contract, where's his trade value gone in the last – since June 5th? It's in the tank. So to the extent you think you're going to get a major asset or two in return, I mean, that's going the wrong way too. So either way, he's got to figure it out so he either can contribute or he has value to move as we are exactly 1 month to the day before the deadline.
Terry, anything you want to add?
Yeah, you know, it's a lose-lose scenario for us if Pivetta's pitching badly because – number one, you're losing games. And number two, even if you're losing games, you want his trade value to be high if, in fact, we're sellers. If we slip below 500 here, I think we're, what, 5 above at the moment? If we happen to fall below it, I mean, at that point, I mean, it is fair enough if Breslow does decide to punt. I mean, we should never have been in this position with this roster. We should have had a much better pitching staff coming into the year with a more balanced lineup. But if we have to punt, it's going to be tragic if Pivetta gets his ERA above, let's say, 5, and his value isn't what we expected it might have been at the start of June. So he has to figure it out. One of the more glaring stats I've seen in the last few days is his third time through the order, opponents are hitting him at a 314 clip, a 314 batting average. So it's a combination of not locating. I forget who hit that home run. That young kid hit it off of, it was Higashioka. And it was just a slider middle. He threw a meatball and Higashioka crushed it. And he's not even a power guy. And so part of it's not locating. Part of it looks like it's poor game planning. They need to have a better strategy for him as the order comes through the third time. And he's a guy that can go 6 or 7 innings. We've seen him do it frequently over the last couple of years. And if you go back to the second half of last year, most of that was spent doing long relief out of the bullpen. But he had a 3.30 ERA after the All-Star break last year. And that's the most sustained run he's been on his entire time with the Boston Red Sox since we acquired him in 2020. So we're starting to see the old Nick Pivetta crop up here. And I mean, Bayo looks like he needs to be optioned. And we probably won't because we don't have the luxury of doing it. But Pivetta has to stay in the rotation. We're not in a spot where we can just relegate him to the bullpen as we have in years past. And we've done that basically every year. He's gone to the bullpen for at least 4 to 6 weeks. We're not in that position this year. So the guy is a mess. And Andrew Bailey really hasn't been able to do anything with him along with Bayo. So I just, hopefully he figures it out. I either want to start winning or I want a decent haul for him in about 4 weeks.
So Pivetta was in a pitcher's timeout when he, I don't remember the exact verbiage of that post game interview, but he said, yeah, I don't understand your question. I'm a starter. That's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to continue doing. And then he went to, a hockey reference here, the sin bin, and basically pitcher timeout. Was not a starter for a little period of time. And then they called his number, came back and pitched lights out at times. And Pivetta started off like gangbusters, just absolutely crushing it. Struck out 10 in his first game. We're like, oh my God, he's back again. Let's go. And then there was a month of baseball being missed. He has not been the same since. He is not the same since the injury. So got an absolute, awful month of May, and then he's matched that with an awful month of June, and somehow he's managed to almost have an even record. But I mean, he's probably lucky to have gotten some of those wins too. I mean, the team is, if you look at the run support that he's received in some of his games, 7 run support, 8 runs of support, 9 runs of support, they shut out Atlanta, which was insane, 11 runs of support. It's incredible that he's had a couple of those just go for an ND, no decision. So yeah, I'm very curious, if Pivetta ends up getting moved, if that's going to be a name that we start, tinkering and dangling and whatnot. The haul could be good, but it might not be as nice as we want it to be if he's pitching like this, because what team is going to say, oh yeah, I got Nick Pivetta. I got an ace pitcher who doesn't fall apart at periodic times during the year. No one's going to be able to say that right now. And that's the problem with Pivetta and the expectation of a really, really good haul if you end up moving him. It might not be this year. It might be 2025, Terry. You might not get the haul that you desire in 2024. If the hope is to move him, you might be stuck with him. So temper the expectation a little bit. Yeah, go ahead.
He's a free agent, though, so I don't think he's coming back either way.
I thought he had one more year. He didn't?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. All right.
I've been saying it wrong all year, if that's the case. But
no, I checked it last week. He's got one more year. I mean, one thing is
he's got one more year.
I thought he had one more year. Okay, I'm not crazy.
Now I'm pulling it up.
I got to pull it up myself too.
I've been saying this whole year. I've been saying this is his walk year, and no one's free agent 2025. Yeah, so this is his walk year.
I stand corrected. I apologize. So I thought he had one more year. Here's the thing. He's a free agent. Yeah. What's the expected haul from? You're not going to get an elite pitcher. You're not going to get an elite prospect for Nick Pivetta. You'll probably get someone. What would you say? 10 to 20.
If he starts lighting it up, if that happens with confidence, you get a top 10 prospect.
Yeah, if he starts lighting up, but that's maybe, I mean, that's the eight ball with him. Maybe.
Maybe you can get a third or fourth outfielder that happens to be a righty as well. And so I'd say at least a couple of prospects and then a major leaguer in return.
Okay. Anything else you want to add, Jeremy?
No, I hope he starts pitching well.
Yeah, that makes three of us. I'll speak for Terrence on this one. Terry, who is your dud, good sir?
My dud, I'm not going to kill the guy because he's been amazing, but David Hamilton was 0 for 8, pair of strikeouts, did not play game 2. And I don't know who the real David Hamilton is at this point. I mean, that run he had is a decent sample size, which lasted about 2 months. So, I mean, it's a much different series when he's not hitting out of that two hole. And Duran had an okay series. He had one hit in every game, actually. I think with a pair of home runs. I didn't write that. Did he hit one today?
Two home runs.
He had a rocket. Everyone was looking like down the right field line to see if it was actually going to continue going fair. Yeah. And it ended up just going left of the pole out in right field. So, yeah, right. It was a nice shot. I believe it was his 9th home run of the year is what I saw on the graphic.
Yeah, we'll perhaps get into him on the other side of it. But it just – it wasn't a good series for him. And, you know, he's fighting for his career, like I said in the last couple of shows. If he can have a breakout year – he's obviously not going to make the all-star team, but if he has a monster second half, if he can get that average, I think it's right around 270 at the moment. If he can get that up to like 300 with a little bit of power, and if he's hitting close to 300, he's going to be stealing some bags. He would probably steal at least 40. I mean, he's trying to guarantee himself a roster spot, if not on the Red Sox, onto another team via trade with this monster year. And he was hitting well over 300 for a 6-week span. And, you know, this is just one bad series. Maybe he gets it together. We do have a relatively easy schedule, as I said in the temperature check, but not a good series at all. There was someone that's worse, but out of respect for Charlie, I decided to stay off of him.
Yeah, there's no point to bringing that up. It's just rude at this point. Jeremy, go ahead.
So just the eyeball test on this game, obviously, it was a very different series, in part because we got blown out two of the three games, but no stolen bases. This team was winning by getting on base, creating havoc. That started with Duran, Hamilton, to a lesser extent, Abreu. Romy Gonzalez plays a role in that. Rafaela plays a role in that. No electricity on the base paths. No havoc, no chaos. One on Wednesday because two home runs. Neat fact, I was listening on the radio, I believe. It was the radio, and the launch angle on the Duran home run was only 22 degrees. So he absolutely smoked that ball.
That was a missile then, yeah.
Yeah. So Hamilton is part of how we're going to win games, and that is get on base, take the extra base, first to third on a ball that's not a traditional first to third steal, press, you know, get, you know, score on short fly balls. Today was a perfect example, short fly ball to right center. I think the center fielder caught it. Yoshida's on third base, and, you know, you got to be able to tag in that. And if it was almost anybody else, they would have been. But without Hamilton on base, it's a problem.
Who's going to hit in that two hole? Like, who's your two hole hitter? You don't have one.
I like Hamilton.
No, I mean, aside from him, like, if he's not getting it done, who do you have? That it's just how critical you need him to perform in that spot.
I think Abreu and Refschneider hits third, or you just drop everyone down. So Duran, Abreu, Devers, O'Neill. So on and so forth.
Yeah, you could do that, I guess. Yeah, just bump everybody else up one.
But. So I really like the stolen bases angle that you brought up. Jaren Duran, the last two games, had two home runs, did not get any other hits outside of that, so no opportunities there. Don't believe he drew a walk. I could be wrong. David Hamilton didn't play the second game. You can't steal if you don't play. But every once in a while, there's going to be an outlier game. If you're losing – you know, they scored 9 runs in one of the fifth inning for game. God, I think it was game one, or let me think. Now I have to double check. Yeah, I think because they did all their damage in that inning. That's it. Yeah, 9 in the fifth, and then they did 6 in the fifth inning the following night. You're already losing by X amount. I don't think there's too much of an incentive to risk an injury and or try to get somebody else in on the stolen bases game. It's really like a two-headed horse here. It's really those two that are doing all the work and all the base stealing. I don't think I'm nervous about David Hamilton. I think this is still just an anomaly you know, series. A lot of players had anomaly series in this one, and it just it sucked that it was all at the same time. But I'd like to see what he can do in a larger sample size, if I may. He's absolutely torched it, and you don't steal that many bases by accident. You just can't. But the one player that comes to mind when people question David Hamilton is Michael Chavis. And here's why. Michael Chavis, when he came to the bigs, was just an absolute monster. And then he was figured out, like, what he could hit and what he couldn't. And then flamed out in Boston, has, you know, found his way to a couple other major league teams. And I don't even know if he's still playing in Washington. I'd have to look it up. But if David Hamilton, if they figure him out, he still has one aspect to his game that you can't eliminate, and that's his legs, at least for the next couple of years. If David Hamilton still has that pop in it, he's immediately a threat. If he can work on, you know, maybe not necessarily hitting home runs every once in a while and just try to get slap singles and things like that, and then you're just getting singles and stolen bases, holy crap, you're in a class of your own, or a short class. I think it's just, you know, it's unlucky, because you're absolutely right. This is a huge part of their game. It has been a huge part of their game over the last couple of series, and they weren't able to take that to that level in this series because you're not getting on base. If you don't get on base or you don't play, you can't steal bases. So to your point, Jeremy, it was tough. But, I mean, not stealing bases was not the reason why we didn't win the first two games.
So
I agree with that 100%. Yeah. I mean, what? Yeah. But that's how they're going to have to win and score runs. And the fifth inning blow up was until the fifth inning, and they didn't do anything to put pressure on earlier in that game. So
Which is fair.
I do get your point. You know, you get to a certain point and kind of the unwritten rules of baseball kick in, and everyone kind of just goes into the ninth inning. But they still had four at bats in that game to get on base and cause problems, and it didn't happen. Sorry, Terry, go ahead.
I was very randomly going to come in with a Michael Chavis status check. He is actually playing for the Charlotte Knights, which is the AAA team for the Chicago White Sox. So he's not quite good enough to play for the worst team in Major League Baseball. But
his nickname with Carrabas? What did Carrabas nickname him?
The Ice Horse.
Ice Horse.
I never really understood that, but he is hitting .271 with a .340 on base, 9 dingers, 36 driven in. So he's got respectable AAA numbers, but I think that's who he is. He's just a AAA guy. He's Bobby Dalbec, and, you know, so is what it is. I mean, even after he popped for PEDs, I was still kind of rooting for the guy. He's a very likable guy, but just couldn't lay off that high fastball was his problem.
I still got to see his first major league home run, so I was always a Chavis guy. I still have that on video. I got to watch on ESPN for 2 days in a row. They're showing it for, apparently it was like a really majestic shot, and his mom, they were interviewing her, and she was just like losing her mind. So that's kind of a cool moment. Anything else you guys want to add? No, right on. So Tanner Houck was my dud for this one, and that hurts. It really, really hurt. And, you know, as I was talking about earlier, 3 home runs in this one, had only given up 2 before this game, struck out 4, 7 earned runs in just 4 1/3, 7 earned of those 8 on 9 hits. It almost looked like, you know, we're not winning this game, and it's not going to get any better. And we just don't have it today. It was one thing after another, and they just kept pounding. His game wasn't the game where it was just one inning. I mean, they did work in multiple innings. They were just chipping away at him, and they were able to, you know, do work. I mean, Manny Machado nailed him. Not once, I believe it was twice. So that hurts. So when you have, you know, arguably one of the most hated guys in Boston go off on you not once but twice, that's a rough game. When anybody hits 2 home runs off the same pitcher in the same game, that's a tough spot to be in. I don't know how many times that's happened in Tanner Houck's career. That'd be an interesting stat to look up. How many players in Tanner Houck's career have hit two home runs against him in the same game? Because I'm pretty sure that was the first time I'd ever seen it. I'd have to look it up because I genuinely don't know. But he didn't have it. I mean, simply put, that just was not his game. I fully expect him to bounce back. I am not nervous about Tanner Houck. Jeremy, anything you want to add?
Yeah, I mean, Pedro had these starts, and he was probably the best right-handed pitcher in Red Sox history as far as my lifetime. It always shocked me when it happened, always. And look, the Padres are a good team. They came in hot. They're left hot. And Machado's one of the best right-handed hitting players in baseball, and he beat you twice, and sometimes that happens. I'm not overly worried on the innings thing yet. I do understand the need to skip starts, extend him to a 6 day as often as you can. He pitched like crap and they had to take him out, but he was limited to 80 pitches. So I don't think the start was overly taxing. So yeah, I'm not worried about Tanner Houck. I'm excited to see how he bounces back.
So the Andrew Bailey narrative is riding 100% on Tanner Houck. Like, it's taking on water right now. And if Tanner Houck gets lit up here over the next few months, and I don't know if the innings is a thing yet, but his next start, he'll blow past it finally. And then we're in uncharted territory. And if he happens to get lit up, I mean, the Andrew Bailey narrative is underwater at this point. It's sinking. And I've said the last several shows, Houck has been pretty solid, but not lights out. You know, he doesn't look acey anymore, and hasn't really since, you know, the fifth or sixth week of the season. But in the last month, that is five starts, Tanner Houck has a 4.85 ERA. His whip, surprisingly, is lower than I thought. It's 1.18, which isn't great, but it's not terrible. Let's see, where is his strikeouts at? 30. So he's striking out about one per inning. So the strikeouts have come way down in the last month, and he's just kind of grinding. And I think other teams are just taking a patient approach to him. If he's not going to be in the zone, why chase? Why chase? He doubled his, thanks to Machado. He had two home runs coming into the series and gave up two more. So his home run total is double. So you can't kill the guy. He's been our best starter. We didn't think, I thought he was a lock for the rotation in spring training, but there was a lot of skepticism that perhaps he would be pitching towards the back end of the bullpen, but he's got to figure it out.
So here's the thing. I hear what you're saying, but I don't know how anybody thought he wasn't going to be in the rotation. I really don't. I mean, you saw what the season looked like at the beginning of the year. That wasn't starting rotation material. We still weren't sure what was going to happen. Were people healthy? I expected him to be at the front of that rotation. In your defense, Terrence, 16 earned in his last five starts, 16 earned in his first 12 starts of the season. So a 1.6 ERA, a 2.09 ERA, and again, a plethora of games that we should have won for him that we just didn't win. I mean, I'm looking at this one right here. Late April, one run on 6 2/3, 9 strikeouts, no decision. One earned in 5 2/3, a loss. 3 earned in 7 innings, a loss. 3 earned in 6 innings, a loss. So many games just did not go his way because we weren't getting runs for him. It's you know, what I would do to have the David Price or, you know, Rick Porcello effect of whenever they're pitching, they get 8 runs or 7 runs. It was stupid, the run support they got. But eventually, and I think Jeremy said this, eventually a pitcher's going to have to hit a new season high for innings. It's going to happen. Tanner Houck cannot be expected to throw 106 to 110 innings and then be done for the season. It can't be. That can't be the case. I expect Tanner Houck to be able to throw 175 to 200 innings if you want to establish yourself as an elite arm in your rotation. I think Tanner Houck has all the makings of being an elite one or two for the next couple of years in Boston. Hopefully we sign him long-term too. I mean, the kid's 28. He's not going to get the craziest contract of all time, but it's probably going to be, you know, the last big one. And I whiffed on Pivetta, so I'm not sure how many years of arbitration or where we're at with Houck, but I'm sure one of you two has a little bit of an idea.
2029, I think, is his walk year.
2029? He's fine then. We got five. We have four more years of him after this, assuming all goes well. And who knows what could happen? You know, in 3 years, major contracts come off the books, but he'll still be here. He'll probably be making good money at that point. So one bad contract drops off, this one, you know, creates itself. It sucks. Tanner Houck had a crap start, but I'm still not worried. You know, like we talked about the home runs. He gave up three before that. He'd only given up two all season, and one was early this month. The first 2 months of the season, he gave up one home run. That's incredible for a starting pitcher. So I really do think that Tanner Houck will re-find himself, because that's just what he's done. So it's just a really bad start, and that's really what I want to chalk it up to. Anything else that you guys want to add? Jeremy.
I looked it up. His walk year is 2028. This is his last year being cheap, because he's $770,000. And then he starts to become incrementally more expensive as he has his three arbitration years. Since May 10th, if you take out the Tuesday's, I keep thinking it's Wednesday night, the Saturday start. He has his shortest outing is 5 2/3 innings, and he had only given up three runs once. So let's not go crazy with the Tanner Houck's falling apart thing, because that's not the narrative.
Well, I think we're just one or two bad starts from that, but
there's nothing that would suggest that's coming based on the last like 10 starts. He's had one bad start.
Well, he's got an ERA of nearly 5 in his last 5 starts, but the Red Sox rotation as a whole is 10th right now, after being number one for I think through mid-May. So, and we're tied for 10th right now with the Cubs. So, I mean, we're sinking fast. In the last 30 days, where are we? Wow, we're way worse than that. We're 22nd in Major League Baseball. That's pitching together, though. Bullpen and rotation, but it has to be the rotation. Yeah. So yeah, we finished June 22nd in MLB.
And how many of those games did we get absolutely shelled? You had two in this series alone. You gave up 20 runs in two games.
Yeah.
Like this, I mean, what was the top team? Philly, 3.13, and you said we were 22nd at 4.38. I'm impressed that we're 22nd and we're not worse. You know, like, here's the thing though, the Boston Red Sox did incredibly well. Pitching performance and pitching methods, ways, whatever. Andrew Bailey, yes, working out, not working out so far, you know, as of late. I'm not going to poo-poo Andrew Bailey until we have a full season to actually discuss and look at and break down, because he did incredible the first month. You cannot discard what happened the first couple months of the season just because they had a really rubbish month of June. Wouldn't you agree? Wouldn't that be fair?
Hopefully he has a counter move.
I'd agree.
Hopefully there's another strategy here where we're going to start mixing things a little differently. The game planning, which is Jason Veritek's job, he's supposed to map out how each starter is going to attack the opposing lineup. Maybe that's got to get looked at, but it's we're sinking fast. Who do you trust right now? And I'll still put Hauk in that category, but
I don't know how you can't. I'm with Jeremy on this one. I don't think it's fair to say that someone can't be trusted because they had one bad start. And coincidentally, it happened to be the last one that he's had so far this season. Because I don't think we'd be talking about the trust tree if this was the first start of the season and he's been lights out or he's been electric the last 2 months, you know? So I think that I still very much trust Tanner Houck, and it would take me a minimum of two like awful performances for me to say we should be even like concerned. Two minimum, because he's earned that. He has earned that. Now, if Pivetta has two bad, you know, appearances, or Bayo gets rocked two more starts, we've been seeing kind of a pattern, because one is not a pattern. One is one. A pattern is three or four or five in a row. So I think if you start to see that from Pivetta and Bayo, yeah, we should continue to raise our hands and say, okay, what's the problem? What's going on? Tanner Houck, it very much could have just been a blip. Next appearance, if he strikes out 10, allows two runs on five hits and seven innings, are we still going to say that we're concerned, Terry?
Well, he hasn't struck out 10 since at least April. So
I was just throwing it out there. So call
which is part of the problem, by the way. Right. Yeah.
You know, so yeah. So let's move into some dishonorable mentions. Bailey Horn had a rough one, two runs on four hits and two and two thirds, a pair of walks, pair of strikeouts, another home run allowed. I think that was the Sullivan home run, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong. Let me see.
I think you're correct. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was Sullivan, because Merrill had one and Machado had two against Houck, and that's what really did him in. And yeah, here we go, Terry, because we have to be honest. Tyler O'Neill did not have a great start in this series. The sombrero is back in the second game of this one. He didn't play today, and one of our loyal fans even called it out, saying, I must be really hurting that I didn't get to see him. I was really looking forward to seeing him hit one over the wall. But, you know, an 0 for series there, not pretty. Five strikeouts, 0 for 8. He's had those series where it can get ugly. But, I mean, I also really think we should remember Toronto. In Toronto, he went off. So, you know, I'm not going to put him in the same class as Teoscar Hernandez for the Dodgers, for example. You know, now living in L.A., I get to see a lot of Dodgers games, and he's exciting to watch. But, man, oh, man, would it be nice for him to have a little bit more consistency like Teo? Teo doesn't strike out, I don't think, as much as Tyler O'Neill. But if you look at their numbers on the season, Teoscar Hernandez has a boatload more RBIs because there's actually people on base when he hits home runs. So those are the two ones that really jump out at me. Is there anybody else that either one of you gents wanted to add for dishonorables?
Reese McGuire has been ass all season. Just not a good backup at this point.
Not great, but he was also the catcher in the only game that we didn't get smoked. Remember that. Connor Wong was the catcher for games one and two before he moved over to first base, and I think Reese ended up catching for like 3 minutes. That's how that one went out. Wow. You know,
I mean, he's about to drop below the Mendoza line, and he's been, you know, a 260, 270 guy for much of his time here. And he gets on base at a decent clip. His on base is 84 points above his average, but I don't know. He's not very reliable at this point.
No, he's not. He's a backup guy. You know, I remember at the beginning of the year, he had that five RBI game against LA, and I remember watching that one, and he was the team leader in RBIs. And we're like, wow, what are the odds that not Devers, not O'Neill, not Duran, not Wong or anybody else is leading your team? Not Yoshida, but Reese McGuire has eight RBIs and is leading the team. That's not possible. That can't be. But it was. And it was only like a brief moment in time, because then he just got figured out. Like, he's, you know, he's hitting 100 for the month. I had to look it up. 3 for 28 before today's action. 3 for 28. That is not scaring anybody. So, you know, and 0 for 3 today. So 3 for 31. Under 100 this month of June. So there's nothing there, you know? That's it.
I'm just saying, I was kind of
my thing is just, I'd like Wong to get more than 8 at bats in a series.
I agree.
He's one of your best hitters. We're so right-handed deficient. He provides a lot more consistency than what you're getting from O'Neill. When O'Neill pops, he has, you know, he can drive in 4 to 6 runs in a series, but Wong has just been steady all year long. And I can't stand that he loses as many starts as he does to Rafaela. Rafaela, Jesus, to McGuire.
To McGuire. It's all good. We know what you meant. It's all good. I mean, to your point, I hit in the first 2 games. He had an RBI in one of the games. It's tough, but it's frustrating. I would really like to know how they figure out which players are getting a day off. You know, like last year or a couple of years ago, I remember Terry, I don't remember what episode, obviously, because it's been so long, but Xander Bogaerts would get a day off after a day off. Like the Red Sox aren't going to play. He's not going to play that day after that, which is the weirdest thing. And I believe it was you that pointed it out. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that became a regular thing. And that was really frustrating. So I don't think that we need to give Connor Wong, Jeremy's point here, because it's very good. You don't need to give him every third day off. He should be able to play 5 of 6 games, 6 of 7 games, 7 of 8 games. This guy is, I'm not sure if he still is, the best hitting catcher in Major League Baseball at a 330 clip. Now it's dropped to 327. Still pretty darn incredible for a catcher. Joe Mauer was someone that used to hit like 330, 340 year in and year out. That was, you know, wasn't a home run hitter, wasn't crazy like that. Connor Wong's got some pop. So I'm curious to see what happens with him too, if we can kind of stretch him out and give him, to Jeremy's point, a little bit more vision and a couple more plate appearances in a series, because it sucks when you only get 8, to your point. Anything else you guys want to add? No? Perfect. We will flip it over to our studs. Jeremy, I will have you lead us off with your stud.
So Duran had 3 hits. Devers had 3 hits. Both had 2 home runs. And Rafaela had 3 hits. Abreu was 5 for 10. You just love to see it coming off a trip to the disabled list. A guy hitting, getting back in the flow. And because he's in the middle of the lineup, it's super important that he continues to get on base, because he also provides a spark with his legs. He also added 2 walks. So he was on base 7 times in this series. And unfortunately, it largely happened in 2 games that were football scores. But I think it's just a good sign. If he's going to be in the middle of the lineup and, you know, you don't know what's happening, as Terry mentioned in the 2-hole, he could be a guy that fills that spot. So really encouraging series from Abreu.
Terry?
Yeah, I felt like he'd been kind of quiet as of late. I didn't have time to pull up his month-to-month numbers, but he had a pretty good start to the season, and then just kind of once Hamilton emerged, he was hitting lower in the lineup and was just kind of quiet down there. He's been hit or miss with his glove. It's always a highlight reel play. It's like, you know, it's either a great defensive play or a massive blunder. I think he airmailed a throw into the third base stands in the last series. But he's a guy that continues to intrigue me. And I mean, he looks like he's most likely a long-term guy with the Red Sox, but we'll see. The one thing, if we fall out of it, and I'm not saying we will, but if we do, I want him facing lefties. He needs to learn how to hit lefties. And he's not going to do it if Cora keeps sitting him in those games. He should be an everyday player. So you may as well make use of August and September, even if they're throwaway months, to get him ready for 2025 and, quite frankly, the rest of his career.
So I remember earlier this year, Willy Abreu had an RBI in 8 straight games. And I remember seeing that graphic. He's doing really, really well in the rookie numbers along with Sadon Rafaela. But the month of May obviously took a little bit of a dip. He had 23 hits and 69 at-bats, had 12 RBIs. Again, nine of those RBIs were in that little eight-game window. The following month, 20 for 86, four homers, 10 RBIs. So you see a little bit more pop. The batting average dropped 100 points. A little nerve-wracking. So far in eight games before today's action, because today also did not knock in a run, nine games, no RBIs, no home runs, five runs scored, which is good, no stolen bases. He did have three in the month of May, but his batting average before today's action actually took a little bit of a dip. So he actually brought it back up to 275, going two for two, walked a couple times as well. A little nervous, you know, Jeremy, I know you mentioned the 6.2 down to 5.9. I'm actually kind of curious where you are with Willie or Abreu on that, like, meter. I kind of like that meter that you got. I might adopt that. Where is he on that meter?
Without the power numbers, I'm like a 6.1. You know, like, fair. I still think he's trending towards being a long time big leaguer. I just don't know if he's going to emerge like let's say Duran's doing right now, as compared to what Benintendi did, which was have a couple good early years and then level off and fade. Like, I could go on either path. So I'm right. My, you know, six is where I'm like, you know, the midpoint for me. Once you fall below it, I'm feeling negatively about it. If you're above it, I'm feeling positively. So I'm slightly above positive approach on Abreu.
I like that. I'm feeling the same way. Terry, anything you want to add for Willie or Abreu?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the no runs batted in, I mean, he did spend 10 or 12 days on the injured list because of the ankle thing. And surprisingly, he is hitting 276 for the month, but, you know, it is what it is there. I do think it's worth noting, though, that he is having a much better rookie year than what Duran had. It really took Duran until year three to have his breakout. So I'm not pessimistic at all about Abreu. I just wonder if he's future trade bait, you know, because I think we're keeping Duran at this point. Roman Anthony, most likely, unless he's the trade bait. One of those two, I think, will get traded. Let me put it that way. I think Duran is completely safe. Rafaela, obviously, completely safe. I think either Anthony or Abreu is going to be a part of a painful trade here. I mean, it'll be a blockbuster trade, but it'll be painful to lose whichever one of those two it ends up being. Honestly, I'd probably rather just trade Anthony, if I'm being completely honest. Abreu looks like a borderline five-tool guy if we can get him firing on all cylinders. He can steal bags, good glove, good arm, good power. So, we've seen it in flashes. I just want to see it a little bit more consistently.
I'll say this. I can't poo-poo the rookies. He's still hitting in the 270s right now. You know, he was one of the three players to have a multi-hit game. Moss had two hits, Devers had two hits, and Abreu had two hits. So I was excited to see Yoshida with two hits because it's the power is not there, but Yoshida made pretty solid contact as well. I'm really agreeing with Jeremy a lot today, Terry. Don't get jealous. But I actually am really curious to see the trajectory of where Willie Abreu ends up, because I don't think he's going to have the same career path as, you know, funny enough, Andrew Benintendi, where, you know, 2 years where it was just, you know, I think he had like a, I didn't look, 21 homer, 90 RBI or 23 homer, 90 RBI season. And it just, he tried putting on too much muscle and bulked up, and he tried being someone he just was not. So if Willie Abreu plays to his strengths, I mean, there's nothing saying that he can't be an elite on base guy, and we just forego the power for him, because, you know, why try to fix something that isn't broken? He wasn't swinging for the fences every single game. You know, he ran into one, but he was an on-base machine getting, you know, singles and doubles in that first month of the year. And he did great. He was great at it. So I'm hoping that he, again, plays to his strengths and, you know, the sky is the limit for somebody like him that has a limited sample size. He's only 25 years old, so he's still young. He hasn't hit his peak. I'm excited for him. Anything else you guys want to add on Abreu? All right. Terry, who is your stud?
I'm going to go with the one starter who didn't suck, and that was Josh Winkowski. Today went surprisingly 5 innings and only had around 60 pitches. I'm surprised Cora yanked him so fast. He made 7 starts in Worcester, so you know he's pretty stretched out. Only gave up 4 hits, struck out just 1, so perhaps that might have been the reason why they just didn't want him seeing the order for a third time, but still a solid start out. And the thing that was really noticeable here was the amount of ground balls he got. He had like 2 or 3 double plays. I mean, in the first inning, he got a double play. Jerickson Profar grounded into one. And I mean, he had a ground out in the second. Haesung Kim, Kyle Higashioka grounded out. Like nobody was hitting the ball in the air. And Luis Arraez hit into a double play. That was the 3rd inning. Profar again ground out. So pretty effective. This is the Padres are the number 2 hitting team in MLB in terms of batting average. So he kept them at bay and did exactly what we needed him to do. And by the time he came out of the game, we were up 4-1.
You forgot to mention that Machado also grounded into double play. And let me tell you, Fenway was electric when that happened because he took his sweet time getting into the dugout. I mean, really loafing it, try to take as much time and give the next guy as much time as he possibly could. It was a very generous jog back to the dugout and literally could have probably high-fived Josh Winkowski. He was that close. Jeremy, anything you wanted to add to Wink?
I mean, we needed this as an organization. I mean, we're talking about Terry asked the question. I think it was hypothetical, so we didn't answer it. But Terry asked the question, who do you really trust? Winkowski. I mean, let's not forget, in a really bad spot, he came in and threw 6 innings in relief in that Toronto series, 8 Ks, saved the bullpen, and then turns around, and this is his – you know, the pressure of being put in the starting rotation, and he responded. He lowers his ERA to 2.8, and, you know, it seems like as somebody struggles, somebody else steps up, and we've kind of lost Pivetta as far as giving us a competitive chance to win each start. Well, Winkowski, if he can replicate these last 2 outings, he's going to be a starter, so it's not going to be out of the bullpen, but 6 innings, 8 strikeouts, you know, he gave up 2 earned runs, effectively a quality start. I mean, you know, I'm excited for the player. And we mentioned this on the weekday show a couple days ago. He could have had, you know, that athlete, you know, downer after you get demoted. And he did the exact opposite. I'm not going to read him again today, but I went and read his AAA stats. They were pretty good. I think he had a 2.8 ERA. You know, made 7 starts, had a game in relief. He plows forward. He puts in the work. He shows he wants to be back. It probably took a little bit longer than he was wanting to do. And then he comes back and these are his first 2 starts. How can you not be positive on the player?
Well, I mean, absolutely. It was a ray of sunshine after 2 back-to-back poundings, and that's not fun. But I'll say this much. I don't know what was going on with Valdez at second base, but that double play never would have happened, I think, if he had given a little bit more effort to the Manny Machado single in the 2nd inning. When we were sitting in grandstands. We're sitting right behind, you know, a couple sections behind the dugout. And I'm watching this play, and I'm watching Valdez move the ball. Kind of, it took like a weird angle, but Valdez looked like he just stopped trying to like go and field that ball, which is a little bizarre. So if you watch that replay again, Terry, if you watch that in the, and Jeremy, actually, you'll be able to do it as well. If you guys have MLB TV or another streaming app that allows you to watch the game again, he looked a little bit uncomfortable, and I wasn't sure. I actually got nervous. I wasn't sure if it was an injury or not, but Winkowski picked him up, and then all of a sudden the defense is playing incredible behind him. You already mentioned all the ground outs, but multiple double plays, that's pretty darn good. When's the last time we had two or three double plays in a game? You know, when's the last time we had back-to-back, you know, innings with a double play? And it's great that this is with Winkowski, who's making his, you know, first start after an incredible relief appearance. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, a career high 8 strikeouts in that relief appearance, with 8, right? So, I mean, he did incredible. I mean, they just, that sinker was flawless. 4 hits over 5 innings, 1 strikeout. I don't care. You don't have to strike out 10 guys in 5 innings if you're not allowing any runs. 69% of your pitches went for strikes. They did not figure you out. And 2 of those guys got canceled out in the double play. So incredible performance by Winkowski. Anything else that you got? Terry.
Yeah, just super quick. Tiny sample size, only 15 and 2/3 innings. But as a starter this year, only a 1.15 ERA.
I mean, who's not going to take that? That was like 3 of our starters at what it felt like, yeah, at the beginning of the year when they just weren't allowing runs. Didn't, you know, we had 1 starter go 6 innings, back-to-back starts, no earned runs, and it was just crazy. So, you know, maybe this is how it's going to start for him too, and eventually we'll bring up another starter who does something like Winkowski. Who knows? My stud for this one was none other than Rafael Carita Devers. He went 3 for 10 in this series, had 2 homers, hit a ball late, and cracked that thing over the monster in Game 3. Fenway was electric. Also tallied another single in that one. So 1 for 6 in those first kind of crappy 2 games, and then really came alive in the 3rd game. So still in the series overall, 3 for 10, a pair of homers, 3 RBIs, a walk, pair of runs scored, obviously. Only a couple strikeouts, but again, I'm not going to poo-poo the strikeouts, because if you're hitting dingers, I mean, you can't really say anything bad about him. Devers now is the clean-cut leader in home runs for the Boston Red Sox. So if you're to do a temperature check of last year to this year, he's actually on pace to do more damage and hit more home runs in 2024 than 2023, albeit his RBI numbers look a little bit lower. His double numbers are on point. And he has 3 triples this year. So no complaints for me. He's also going to probably draw over 70 walks when the season is over. I don't know if he'll get to 100, but people are starting to take notice of Rafi Devers. Jeremy, if you'd like to go first.
Well, one thing I'll notice is walk total is going to go up in August and September while pennant teams don't want to pitch him with the other people that are going to be around him. But just a side note there. I mean, you've said it all. He's a superstar. He's a stud. We talked about him on the midweek show. His defense has been better, at least at balls hit at him. You know, and every series looks like this. 3 for 10, 3 for 12, 4 for 13, drives in 2 or 3 runs. I mean, what can you say? What can you say negatively? Plays the game with a smile on his face. Teammates love him. I talked a lot about how he's one of the people that, because he's been paid, will speak out against ownership. And I like that too. So yeah, I mean, all positive for me for Devers.
Charlie, who's the best third baseman in all of Major League Baseball without looking?
Not looking. Are we talking about offensively or defensively?
Offensively.
See, the question posed was both most complete third baseman, but now he's qualifying it to make his point.
I should have specified early. I have a terrible tendency not to do that.
Well, man, before, honestly, I'm a little biased here, but I think the best one pre-injury would have been Austin Riley for the Braves. I thought he was the best guy with an absolute cannon pre-injury. Why don't you hit me with where you're going with this one?
I was expecting you with very little hesitation to tell me Jose Ramirez from the Guardians is the best third baseman.
He is, you know what? You're right. Because I had this conversation with somebody else about who was the best third baseman, him or Manny Machado, and he's got him for light years. You're absolutely right. You are 100% correct. Ramirez is the best third baseman.
Devers is the best offensive third baseman right now, though. His batting average is only 6 points higher than Ramirez, but his on base is 36 point higher. His OPS is 50 points higher than Ramirez, and Devers has played 8 less games because, you know, he had that knee thing going on, but still just 1 less double than Ramirez, 5 less home runs, but he's very quietly, I mean, he's not gonna finish top 3 or 4 MVP, but man, if you can just get him some consistent guys around him, you know, I just feel like
he was leading the league in RBIs at one point. I'm looking at his numbers now that you mention it. Have you seen his numbers now in relation to 2023?
No, but I bet they're a lot better.
They're almost identical.
Really?
Last year in 156 games, he had 24 homers, 80 RBIs. So far this year in 79 games, 23 home runs, 76 RBIs. So yeah, he's going to hit way over 30 home runs. He's going to hit way over 120 RBIs. He's going to probably hit 30 stolen bases for the second time in his career. He's done the 30-30 thing. I don't know. Maybe he can come close to 40-40. I'm not sure. But he's been incredible. You're absolutely, I can't believe I blanked on him. That's absolutely fair. Bad, like, tapping the hands there.
The one category Ramirez is actually crushing him on is runs batted in. He's about 30 ahead of him, and Ramirez is actually number 2 in Major League Baseball at 76, yeah, only behind Aaron Judge at 82.
Which is understandable. Understandable. He's got 33 home runs? How many home runs does he have?
31.
He had another one today.
31,
oh,
yeah.
Okay. I thought he had another one today. So today was 31. That was his 31st?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. Wow.
And this is another insane one. So Judge versus Ramirez. Judge has 61 walks. Ramirez, who's been an on-base machine for most of his career, only 25. 61 to 25. That's just, Judge is just out of this world right now. But just getting back to Devers, you know, the fact he has so many fewer runs batted in, let's just see where he is in all of MLB. He's actually down there quite a ways. Yeah, he's not even in the top 25. I think that's more of an indictment on the Red Sox front office for, you know, not getting the right guys around him. So that's all I got on Devers.
No, totally fair game. Any other honorable mentions that you guys would like to discuss? Terry, anybody specific you want to talk about?
I mean, just rapid fire. Duran, 2 home runs on the series like we teased earlier. I still think he's going to hit at least 20 bombs, maybe even 25. I mean, he's really finding that power stroke. Rafaela had a 3-hit game, wasn't anything special beyond that. Going down, you know, Zach Kelly had a scoreless outing. Dom Smith out of the bullpen, scoreless inning. Slayton gave up a run. Martin and Jansen, their typical solid selves. That's about all I got for honorables.
He refuses to mention Yoshida went 3-for-9 in the series.
Yeah.
I saw Yoshida get minor 2 hits detail today. I was in shock. My dad's like, uh-oh. And I was like, well, maybe. And one of the maybes, he got a hit. And I was like, I just looked at him. He goes, okay. And I said, maybe. The second time it didn't work out. He did hit a deep, dead shot to Merrill, who was playing in center. I believe it was Merrill playing center field. And it was a crack. But Merrill had to – he needed to backpedal a little bit because that was a rocket to deep center. That was later in the game. And he barely missed it. That could have very easily gone for two or, you know, four bags. Anything else?
My pipe dream is that Yoshida hits 467 in the month with six home runs and we send him to the Dodgers.
That won't happen.
With all pipe his friends. Fun. I said it was a pipe dream.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen. They are so stacked. They're going to have to start unloading some of their talent. That is going to do it for all of us here. Have a great night. Take care.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.